Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Podcast, Rich DeCray. I'm Matt Hofeld. We're here to talk some Sooner hoops. Absolutely, we've got to talk Oklahoma football. And Rich, I'm even going to give an appearance to Oklahoma softball tonight. That's how deep we're going to go in this episode of the Sooner Nation podcast. Hey, here's the thing. Oklahoma basketball, big win over Kansas. Now, the Sooners were close in Lawrence. They pull off the win over number 9 Kansas in Norman on Saturday, 75-68. In a game that really, if you watch it from start to finish, you would almost even say that it wasn't as close as the 7 points that Oklahoma won by. There was a lot of when you always talk about when you play a team or a program, the caliber of Kansas, one of those stalwarts of the sport that they're in, be it Oklahoma in softball or Oklahoma, a Notre Dame, in football, those big powerhouse Alabama type things, there's that stigma of this is who we're playing. And that really kept Kansas in this game more than anything else, because from wire to wire, you got the impression that Oklahoma was the better of the two teams on the floor. And Rich, is crazy because when you look at this roster that Lon Kruger's put together, you've got the young kid in Divian Harmon, who's into a sophomore season, and then you got the seniors in Brady Manick and Austin Reeves, and then you can put in the transfers like Harkless and Gibson. Is it possible that Lon Kruger has patched together a roster at this point that's more talented than the Kansas Jayhawks?
That's a difficult question for me to answer straight up. What I do believe is that Kansas is not recruiting at the same level that they have in the past.
Because they can't get players anymore. I mean, they're about to get – they have to –
right.
Got all their I's and cross all their T's, because the NCAA is definitely looking at them. And so, I see exactly where you're going. And
right.
I know I'm interrupting you, but I'm agreeing 100% with what your train of thought is right now.
You're okay, because what we know about Kansas is they are – undergoing an NCAA investigation. That's something that's, and this was brought up on the broadcast for this game. It's mm-hmm. not something that I just have insider knowledge on. I'm essentially repeating what was said. If you watch the game on Saturday, Kansas has been under NCAA investigation for 3 years now. We've seen the dip in recruiting. And when it comes to the players on the court, what Kansas doesn't have this year, which is vastly different from years past, is a true superstar. There's not a single name on the roster that I'm looking at and saying this is a surefire NBA lottery draft pick in the upcoming NBA draft. It's just not that kind of Kansas team. It doesn't change the fact that I believe that they're still well coached. They still have a schematic about them that gives opposing teams in the Big 12 some issues on the offensive side of the court because of what Kansas is doing defensively. You've seen some length. You've seen the ability to really single in on guys who are expected to carry the load from the opposition. And then what does Kansas do? They shut that player down and they make the other players on the court beat them. Unfortunately for Kansas this time, Oklahoma, I think at this point of the season, we know that Brady Manick missed that first meeting. We know that he didn't really have a major impact in this meeting, but him simply being available is something that has to be accounted for. You look at a guy like Austin Reeves, who didn't have the best game of any player on the court. I still believe that belongs to Devion Harmon, but the fact that he's on the court changes what Kansas is doing defensively, especially what he did in the second half, the latter 10 minutes there of the second half. It changed this dynamic, but what I'm looking at with Oklahoma is – they've got experience. and they're bringing these young guys along. We've seen this incredible leap from freshman year to sophomore year out of Devion Harmon. I only expect for that to continue to progress throughout the season as he becomes the superstar and the future of this team for the foreseeable, I guess, 2 years, since you only get 4 years of eligibility, and he played as a true
do-over year. He could play for five. It's a do-over
year. Okay. I'd say he played as a true freshman, but we look at that experience that he gained. He's making that leap forward. The 22 points against Kansas says that there's potential for him to do something special. But Matt, all of that gibberish that I'm giving you, the one thing that stands out to me, I mentioned what Kansas does defensively. I've mentioned that they're a well-coached team. But what I saw Oklahoma do that they didn't do in the first game was knock down shots. And that, believe it or not, as simple as it seems, was all of the difference. Whereas Oklahoma, I've got the stats pulled up right here. Oklahoma in that first contest, they weren't shooting but 30, I think it was 36 or 37%. You look at the second contest against Kansas, it's up to 45, and they matched Kansas each and every trip up and down the court. Again, I know when you put points on the board, that is the objective. It's not groundbreaking or anything of that nature, but what Oklahoma did was they scored and they consistently moved the ball.
So if I were to tell you before this game started that Brady Manick would come off the bench for the second game in a row and that Austin Reeves wouldn't score a single point in the first half, what are the chances that you would give Oklahoma of beating Kansas?
Yeah, it would have been almost zero at that point in time. I knew that Brady Manick was dealing with an injury on top of the COVID situation, which forced him not even to the sideline, but to home where he watched the games on TV. Bringing him in slowly, I think, is the right move from Lon Kruger. I very rarely question Lon Kruger's judgment when it comes to the handling of the players, but bringing a guy like Brady Manick, who one is the most experienced player on the roster in the Big 12, against a number 9 team in the country in the Kansas Jayhawks, once again at home, I thought he would kind of reinsert himself or reassert himself and compete for that starting role or one of the starting five. We know that Brady Manick stretches the floor. We know what he allows some of these guards to do when he's on the court. And without him, it's a different game plan. Without a guy like Alondis Williams, it's a different game plan. Without Jalen Hill, again, it's a different game plan. All three of those players being back but not having as big of an impact. To answer your question, Matt, I would have given them maybe a 15 to 20% shot of winning that contest.
All right, so you said the word superstar earlier, and so I'm just going to bring this back around and ask you, as of right now, January 24th, 2021, who is the star on this Oklahoma basketball team? Who is the guy?
I am going to stick with my guns here. I don't know that there's the guy. I feel as though preseason it was very easy to say that it was Austin Reeves. As the season's worn on, don't get me wrong, Austin Reeves, great college player, but I have to give a hat tip to Harmon and what he's doing, the progression, the willingness to drive, the willingness to take some contact, but still put the ball in the net. He's been the difference maker for me, especially as of late.
Now, you're a guy who, when it comes to basketball, the word you like to use is consistency. Harmon's last three games, 22 against TCU, 16 against Kansas State, and then 22 against Saturday against Kansas. Is he a guy that, you know, that's only three games, but is that the kind of consistency you're looking at? And if you compare him up with like Austin Reeves, you know, Austin Reeves had a terrible first half, but I mean, he was a spark plug in the second half with 16 points over the final 20 minutes. Is he that guy? We've talked about the big three, you know, and I'm throwing Mo Gibson in there because he's one of the guys that can go off and have a career night any night as well. But if Manning's having a good night and Reeves is having a good night or Gibson's having a good night, does Harmon become that guy who's like the tandem, you know? So for example, Saturday, it was Harmon in the first half and then it was Reeves in the second half. So you had the tandem of Reeves and Harmon. This Saturday, it could be Brady Manick and Harmon. Is Harmon the consistency guy that you're going to say now, okay, you've seen 22, 16, and 22 over the last three games. He's that guy that's going to partner with one of these other three dudes, Gibson, Manick, you know, Reeves, and make that duo that Oklahoma needs to really push themselves further into the season?
It's extremely possible.
That's a long way to ask a simple question. I'm sorry for that.
You're good. It's extremely possible, in my opinion. But the real question, I'm going to throw this back at you, is we're saying that I'm not saying more so you're posing this question of, is Devion Harmon the complement to a volume shooter like an Austin Reeves? What if we flip that on its head and say, are these guys the complement to Devion Harmon at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying. And if you look at the last three games, it certainly would appear to be that way. But I think the reality is, Rich, that your volume shooters are Reeves and Manny. Those are the guys to shoot. And Harmon's the facilitator. And I think whenever you can get a guy that can, you know, if you're defending Oklahoma, I think Harmon's your third guy. If you've got Manic, Reeves, and Harmon's on the floor, Harmon's the third guy. Because Reeves and Manic are both going to stretch you inside and outside, driving the lane. Harmon's going to facilitate that. And then when you give them the extra attention, Harmon's going to benefit from that. I don't know that Harmon can create his own shot the way an Austin Reeves can, but I definitely think Harmon can benefit from the attention that an Austin Reeves or Brady Manic draws from the opponents. And we saw that Saturday against Kansas. We saw the game before against TCU, and we saw it a week ago against Kansas State.
I'm not 100% sold at the moment that Devion Harmon is the facilitator of this team. I get that he's going to slot in as that point guard, but when you look at the assists that he's throwing out, he's scoring more often than he's making the last pass on a good offensive possession. What I'm looking at, and this is the fact that I think we need to succumb to, whether we've realized it or not, again, this was something that was brought up on the broadcast, but what I know about this Oklahoma team is that they're exceptionally good at the free throw line.
Right.
If they can consistently get to the free throw line, they're going to make a living. They're going to surprise some teams. They're going to knock off two number nine teams in the country when they come to Norman in West Virginia and Kansas. Who shot the most free throws, Matt? It's Austin Reeves. I get that. But I think a lot of what we have to consider is that Devion Harmon scoring without making the numerous trips to the free throw line. He only had four trips. He was 100% in the game against Kansas, which is 4 points of his 22. So 18. And I'm sure we could go look at a shot list from him and see what were made and what were missed. But a majority of those are going to come in or near the paint.
Yeah, I can get on board with that. I did want to bring up one other player. It's a guy that you've talked about in the past, and that's Elijah Harkless. Seeing him come around, he's benefiting from Brady Manic being on the bench and, or I guess, coming off the bench for Brady Manic. But you look at Harkless and you see him begin to really kind of find his place. This guy could end up developing into the most NBA-rated player by the time he leaves Norman. But when you look at this current roster and you think of guys and taking that next step, Brady Manic, he's going to be a project. I don't think he'll ever have an NBA career. Austin Reeves is going to be a journeyman who's probably going to end up in Europe. But I think Harkless is a guy that can continue to develop his game, continue to make the necessary adjustments to play just on a higher tier of collegiate basketball. This guy has some potential.
I'm not going to disagree with the potential. And where I think Harkless can really shine is more on the defensive side than it is in putting points up on the board. You see the frame that he possesses. You see, first off, the physicality that he plays with as well. There were several moments in that Kansas game, Matt, where I saw what you're talking about in that development, but playing with confidence has a lot to do with that, obviously. And when you're 6'3" and you're going down amongst the trees and pulling down rebounds, it says a lot about the grit that you have, the determination that you have. And ultimately, that's what I believe will propel him forward. I don't know what the NBA outlook is for a guy like Elijah Harkless. I'm not going to say it's not there, but I don't know that I'm ready to say it is there.
Well, I mean, time's going to tell. He's still developing, and he's nowhere near ready right now. I just say in the future, before he leaves Norman, I think he'll be a legitimate NBA draft prospect. Oklahoma now winning three in a row. We talked about it Kansas State, TCU, now Kansas. The Sooners have a big one now with Texas. I have said all along, I believe Texas is the best team in the Big 12. You think it's Baylor?
I do.
And Tuesday night, we'll find out just how good Oklahoma is in comparison to that top tier of the Big 12, which I think is – I said the last time we really talked basketball that I felt like it was Texas and Baylor, and then Kansas was kind of sliding down the hill a little bit. And I think Kansas is down, fully down on the second level of programs in the Big 12 that, honestly, Rich, it's not as deep as what I thought it was going to be as far as the number of programs that are on that second tier of the conference play. It's I mean, look, Oklahoma's they're right now third in the Big 12, which is better than a lot of people expected, you know, more than a month into the season. But the reality is this is a deep conference. I think you and I have talked about it. They said on the broadcast Saturday, 7 teams will get into the NCAA tournament as of right now. But, man, Texas and Baylor, they're in a league of their own right now when I look at the Big 12. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I do agree, which is really shocking for me when it comes to the Texas Longhorns. I did not expect them to be as good as they are. I did not expect them to rattle off the number of wins. I get that we haven't played a full season, but the number of wins that they've collected, I didn't expect them to rattle those off so early in the season. Baylor is no surprise for me, though. I mean, they're unanimously picked to win the Big 12 conference this year. They have the Big 12 preseason player of the year, and they've got a starting five that I believe is possibly better than any starting five in the country. We'll see just how far that starting five can carry them, as well as the bench play carries them into the NCAA tournament, assuming that we get to have one this year. But when it comes to that separation, Matt, I think you've got it spot on. I think there's Baylor. I think there's Texas, the clear two ahead of, I mean, they're standing ahead above the rest. And then you've got this kind of muddied up area that's in the middle, which I do think includes Oklahoma. I think Texas Tech is the best of that bunch, but Texas Tech, Oklahoma, West Virginia, all sitting in there. And then you have another jumble of teams. And of course you've got the two at the bottom. So this has been an interesting season for Big 12 basketball. It's going to continue to be interesting. But one of the things, Matt, that you had pointed out to me this past weekend was it looks like the Big 12 is primed to put 70% of the teams into the NCAA tournament this year.
Yeah, I think the way it stands right now, Iowa State, Kansas State, and TCU, I think, would be out. Everybody else in. And it's crazy to me when you look at a program like Oklahoma State. You know, we're talking about that second level of teams in the Big 12. And you mentioned it, Texas Tech, West Virginia, Kansas, Oklahoma. Oklahoma State is in that second group, but they're kind of hanging in, just barely hanging on, 3-4 in conference play. But yeah, those are the 7 teams I think I would put in right now, which ironically also Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are the only 2 of those 7 that are currently not ranked.
Yep. Got all nothing to add to it, man.
Well, we're going to move on, true or false. And we are going to run the gauntlet with sports, a little bit of everything coming in there. And I'm A-okay with that because I'm the guy asking the questions.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, Rich, here we go. True or false, we're going to jump in here. We just kind of bridge out of basketball, but the first question here does deal with basketball, and it deals with the very last statement I made in that conversation. Here's what I'm talking about. Oklahoma currently sits in third place in the Big 12 behind Baylor and Texas. Here's what's interesting about that. Baylor number 2 in the nation, Texas number 5 in the nation. And then you've got Oklahoma followed by Texas Tech, West Virginia, and Kansas, all ranked within the top 15. Oklahoma, the third place team in the Big 12, currently unranked. True or false? Oklahoma deserves to be and is legitimately a top 25 basketball team right now.
I do agree. I actually had this conversation today looking at the number of wins, losses, the wins over ranked opponents. When you're sitting at that 12, now 13 game mark, it's hard for me to argue that Oklahoma shouldn't be included when there are other teams who I don't think have the same resume, don't play in a very difficult league when compared to the Big 12, that are in not just the top 25, Matt, but are in the top 15, top 10 range at this point. I get that all of that could change, but Oklahoma true does deserve to be in the top 25 given what they've posted at this point of the year, given some of the hurdles that they've had to overcome, and given the wins over ranked opponents.
Okay, so here's a bonus part of my first true or false question. We're recording this on Sunday night, the 24th of January. The new poll will be coming out this week after we publish this podcast. Will Oklahoma be in that top 25 poll?
I don't know. That can go any which direction. My gut says yes. And largely because the media and the name that is Kansas has such a correlation of being a powerhouse, being one of the blue blood programs. And we consistently heard this on Saturday that this was a marquee win. This was a win you could hang your hat on for Oklahoma, given those facts, given the perception of who Kansas is, who Kansas has been, and who Kansas will be. It's hard for me to say no.
I agree. I think they'll be in. All right, let's move to number two, and it's going to be a softball question. Oklahoma softball was picked to win the Big 12 once again, like for the 5,000th year in a row. True or false, this will be the most challenging conference season that the Sooners have had in the last 10 years?
Man, that's a good question.
Thanks, buddy.
That's a real good question. I don't know that it would be the most challenging, Matt. I'm going to go with false on that one. I think the Big 12 has some quality players. I believe that they have a quality schedule, and I believe the Big 12 from top to bottom has some teams that are going to make some deep runs into the postseason, Oklahoma specifically being one of those. But when I look at the challenge, when I look at what Oklahoma has been able to do, time and time again, we see very few losses coming in conference play. We see perfect seasons in conference play. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Oklahoma's on a in conference games, they're on a 50-something game win streak. It's been 2 years since they've lost a conference
game. They've won, I think they've won 54 consecutive conference series. So if you think about that.
Series, not games.
Right.
You got to multiply that then.
Right.
Which is an impressive feat in and of itself. Now Oklahoma's returning some senior talent. More importantly, they're returning some senior pitchers who are expected to carry this team, and they continuously find themselves loaded on the offensive side of things as well. Patty Gasso now has the number one and unanimous number one recruit, as well as a number two or number four, depending on which site you're looking at for the rankings, ranked recruit coming in, both of whom batted over .702. One as a career, but one as a senior in high school. This is going to be a loaded team once again. I don't know that it's the most challenging Big 12 slate. I don't know that it's the most challenging schedule that Oklahoma has ever put together. So I do have to go with false on that one.
I do think two things real fast. Number one, Patty Gasso's talking about how good this team could be offensively. You mentioned the pitchers, Giselle Juarez and so forth. That
Shannon Gasso's, Sale.
Yeah. No, Shannon Sale's gone. Isn't she? I thought she graduated. Did she not?
No one graduated.
Yeah, you're right. COVID.
Shannon Sale came back. Yeah.
COVID. But the point is that Patty Gasso's talking about offense. When you think about this, the pitchers that are in this league, and particularly on Oklahoma's roster, and to have Patty Gasso talking about how good they're going to be offensively, that puts together a very scary lineup for opponents. But I think Texas is going to be really good. I think they're probably going to be the second best team in the Big 12.
And I
think
agree.
Oklahoma State's still going to be pretty good. They were building something. Remember, they made it the last time there was a Women's College World Series, Oklahoma State was there. Mm-hmm. So they're building something there as well. It's been 10 years since Oklahoma has not won the Big 12 championship.
Baylor's not the team that they were.
No, that's true. But I think Oklahoma State comes in there as that team that really replaces Baylor, where you've got three solids and then you've got some teams that are just going to be good. I think the Big 12 gets more than those three in the NCAA tournament. But I think those are the three that you're going to look at competing to host regionals and super regionals and so forth. The bottom line is spring sports are coming, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Okay. Well, the one thing that hasn't even mentioned is that we saw an Oklahoma team, and it's easy to think of what they could have been capable of had the season not been canceled.
Right.
But it's easy to overlook the fact that that was a team without Nicole Mendez available.
Yes.
She's back as well.
Playing. Yeah. And Mendez started getting some time as the season was being abruptly stopped. So yeah, that's a great point about Nicole Mendez.
Well, she's back as well. And I think she adds, I mean, this is a utility player who could play anywhere on the field. She can come in and pitch. I'm sure she could catch. We've never seen her do it. She can play the infield or the outfield. You talk about a player who can easily shore up any deficiencies or any weaknesses that this team has in the early going and let some of these younger players develop. It's a complete game changer for me.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so let's take the big transition that many of our listeners like us to do, and that's going to go into football for the last three parts of this true or false segment. Here we go. Number three, Oklahoma picks up two offensive linemen and a quarterback in the transfer portal. True or false, the Sooners aren't finished with the portal yet this season.
Had you not put portal on that, I would have said true. The portal, though, is one of those I felt as though if Oklahoma was going to look towards transfers to fill any kind of voids, we laid out those three positions on a previous podcast a couple of weeks ago. Oklahoma's gone in and they've shored up the quarterback position, the offensive line, and any depth concerns that may have existed after Adrian Ealy opted for the NFL draft, as well as Creed Humphrey. I thought they could take a wide receiver for, again, depth purposes there. That's the one that concerns me. I'm going to go on a whim here, and I'm going to say true. Oklahoma is not done with the transfer portal, as they will look to add depth, knowing that they only signed 16 names to scholarships on that incoming class.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you, and I'm going to even tell you three positions that I know they're looking at. I know they're looking at the defensive line, where there's a defensive end coming out of Auburn, Big Cat Williams, who could potentially be coming to Oklahoma pretty quick. Also, I know they're looking at running back, and I know they're looking at defensive back there in the secondary. Those are three positions. And as crazy as in a roundabout way, Tennessee is involved in all of these. You know, you get the big offensive lineman from Tennessee, and then there's a running back from Tennessee, and there's a defensive back from Tennessee, and then you've got the defensive lineman, Big Cat Williams, who was going to transfer from Auburn to Tennessee, and because of everything that's happened there in Knoxville with the coaches and the firings and all that stuff, Williams has changed his mind, still kind of out there in the portal. And a lot of people, if you look at the experts, they're saying he's going to end up at Oklahoma as well. So I think there's at least three positions. I mean, it's like recruiting. You don't get everybody you go after, but there's at least three positions they're interested in, and I think they're going to lead out on at least one of those three positions. Okay, moving along. Mike Stoops, here's number four. Mike Stoops was offered the job this last week at Texas to coach linebackers, and then he had it rescinded after the boosters got involved in the conversations. True or false, this is why Texas isn't back.
I'm gonna say, wait. Which part are you asking me? Is it it's because of the boosters?
Yeah, because
or because of the coaching staff?
No, because Sark goes out there and says, you know what? I'm gonna hire my buddy Mike Stoops. I've coached with him at Alabama. I know what he can do. He's not gonna be a defensive coordinator. He's gonna be a linebackers coach, something that I know he can excel at. Sark offers him the job. Mike Stoops goes to Nick Saban and said, look, I got a job offered a position coach's job at the University of Texas. I'm going to take it. He officially resigns his analyst job for Alabama, gets ready to come on a plane on Friday to look for houses in Austin, Texas. And then Sarkisian has to call Mike Stoops and say, you know what? Sorry, buddy. This isn't going to work out here because the boosters found out about it and they're not going to have anybody on our staff with the last name Stoops. Also, pretty much, I think Sarkisian found out he doesn't really call the shots at Texas either. So true or false, this is the reason why Texas isn't back.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with false. at this point in time. And the reason that I'm going to say false, Matt, is because I believe for the past decade, Texas has created a culture that has been toxic for their football team. We talked about on podcasts years ago, and I know that it was a very prevalent thought around the program from other fan bases, whether the Texas fan base bought into this or not. It was this word of entitlement that because of the name on the front of our jersey, because of the money that that name pulls in donations and boosters, because of that name consistently getting respect from the media and finding itself in the top 25, that not a lot had to actually be earned on the field. I think Texas learned that the hard way. Now they've brought in several coaches, Sarkisian being the most recent of those who they believed could turn this program around after Mac Brown left. And Matt, I know that you've been a huge proponent of saying this was a culture that was taking a nosedive towards the end of Mac Brown's tenure as the head coach of the Longhorns. Charlie Strong couldn't do it. Tom Herman couldn't do it. I had asked you last week if Sarkisian was really that last ditch effort. I don't think it has anything to do with the boosters. I think it has to do with leadership in the locker room and players passing down a toxic culture to the incoming freshmen more than anything else that it currently exists at the university. Is it something that Sarkisian can turn around? That's something that only time will be able to tell us. But I've relinquished this idea that in order for Oklahoma to be relevant, Texas must be good. We've seen since the college football playoff has come along that that's not the case. Oklahoma has done just fine, and entering their name into the Final Four, into this cup, if you will, for that championship game, and has done so consistently. And Texas has not necessarily been good. The perception may have been different, but those who followed and are haters of the program, like you and I, Matt, we would have never said that Sam Ellinger was a good quarterback. We would have never said that this was a running back core at the University of Texas that could legitimately carry the Longhorns to victory if the passing game wasn't working. We've seen issues, like I've said, in numerous areas. I believe number one, we're pinpointing culture. And number two is this is something that dates back to Charlie Strong, if you're asking me. But it's recruiting that has really let this program down as well, not the boosters.
I think it's just all, I mean, I think it's all around, Rich. I can't disagree with anything that you just said, but when your boosters are coming to your head coach, can you imagine if Lincoln Riley was going to hire Brian Odom and then the boosters came and said, nope, sorry, you can't hire him. Can you imagine what that would have done to Lincoln Riley's psyche as the head coach of the University of Oklahoma, and to have the exact same, before he's even coached a game, he's already been basically told, hey, you know, here's who really is the boss. It's us. It's the boosters. It's not you. It's just crazy what goes on in Texas. And it's I believe it's a toxic atmosphere that starts at the top and works its way down. And when I say the top, I mean, not even in the locker room, it trickles down in the locker room from way up high in the press box suite area of DKR.
And I'm going to give you a little bit of credence here. I'm going to throw you some credit, because Texas, with all the money that they do pull in, I understand the footprint that Texas has, not just in the state of Texas, but across the country. They thought all of the money would be enough weight to convince a guy like Urban Meyer to come coach. Urban Meyer threw in an astronomical number that I wouldn't have been shocked if the Longhorns would have met that number. It all came down to what the buyout would be for Tom Herman. I don't think that was the holdup either. I honestly believe that people on the outside are speaking truth, Matt. They see the issues and they're saying, I'm not the guy to come and fix that. Mm-hmm. And Urban Meyer was certainly joining that crowd and making that statement, which is why he chose to go elsewhere.
Not only did he chose to go elsewhere, he picked the worst team in the NFL. That's what Urban Meyer thinks of the Texas Longhorns. This is a program that is so messed up and so toxic. I'll go to the worst team in the NFL and I'll coach them before I come to Austin, Texas.
Right.
Let that sink in.
It's lovely.
There. Okay, here we go. Last one. We're coming back around to the transfer portal. Still sticking with football, though. Transfer portal players will be the key to OU playing in the national championship game next year. True or false?
Transfer players will not be the reason Oklahoma plays. You said the national championship or just the college football playoff?
They'll play in the national championship. Filling holes with transfer portal players will be the key.
With the players who currently exist that are coming from the transfer portal, I'm saying no at this point. Now, if Oklahoma had secured a running back from the transfer portal who was a big name, highly touted, and highly sought after in the transfer portal, my opinion would be different. But when I look at this Oklahoma team and I look at what happened from the first five games of the season to the second half of the season, the one biggest factor, the one difference maker was undoubtedly, possibly, Matt, your favorite player on the roster, Ramondre Stevenson. Revitalized that the rushing attack, which took a lot of the pressure off of a young first-year full-time starter at quarterback in Spencer Rattler, and Oklahoma ran the table from there. We didn't see them drop a game. Now, they played a couple of close contests, but they didn't drop a single game from there on out, and that continued up into the bowl season. Now, I know the hope was that Stevenson would opt to come back for one final year to help out with that national championship case and help Oklahoma's ranking, but Spencer Rattler, I do believe, will make that leap forward. We've already seen him turn the corner after four overtimes against Texas, a game that Oklahoma won. We saw him begin to mature. We saw him begin to develop. We saw the poise that we knew he displayed at the high school level begin to manifest itself on the collegiate level. He will be the difference maker going forward. I think that goes without saying, which turns me to the second concern, which is the offensive line. But I do believe there are players, whether it's Andrew Rame, whether it's McIver at center, I believe that those are capable names. Oklahoma has the ability to take. Now, you're going to get me in trouble here, Matt. You're going to get me in trouble. Are we counting Chris Murray in this?
He's a transfer portal player.
He is a transfer, but he's not a transfer portal player.
The kid they just got from Arizona who's going to replace Creed Humphrey, transfer portal player. Three of his five offensive linemen could be from the transfer portal.
I'm sticking with my gut, though, because the most progress that we wanted to see, whether Chris Murray has a significant impact on the offensive line and this rushing attack, has yet to be seen. But where we saw the most progress and why we believe Oklahoma's worthy of the college football playoff, more importantly, worthy of playing in the national championship game, was the improvements on the defense. I know that Oklahoma has talent. I know they've got some lengthier guys that they are going to slide into starting roles in the coming year who do have experience, like a Woody Washington, guys who do have experience and have proven that they're capable of making plays on a consistent basis. It's the defense that will win this team a championship, not necessarily the offense.
I'm going to stay in your corner for just a minute. But I am going to say, I do think there's a legitimate chance three of your five offensive linemen going into next season could be transfer portal guys. But if Oklahoma lands this transfer defensive end from Auburn to kind of take over a Ronnie Perkins type role in this defense, or if they get the Gray kid, the running back from Tennessee, to come in and pair him alongside Kennedy Brooks. I don't think the transfer portal is finished. We've already talked about that. And if those two guys come on board here, I think I'm going to have to change course and say, yeah, those are the guys that can take a very good Oklahoma team that I believe on its own right now, the way that roster is a college football playoff worthy team. And it can make them not just a contender for the national championship game, but really a front runner and a heavy favorite to get to that national championship game. If you land at least two more guys out of that transfer portal that I know right now Oklahoma is pursuing. That's all I'm saying.
It's a fair point. I'm not leaning into them. One, because lack of experience in this system. I'm not leaning into them because I also don't know where they're at mentally. Mm-hmm. We talk about transfers who first have to recover mentally from whatever situation they're transferring out of. And I mean, there are players who don't have to do that. I get that. I know not There's not one cookie cutter solution for all transfers, but I have to be concerned about that on the surface.
All right. Well, we'll see how it all plays out because none of those three guys are on campus just yet. And I believe the 29th is the last day to drop or to enroll in classes if you want to be here for the spring semester, which means if you're coming from the transfer portal, you most definitely want to be here for the spring semester if you want to find yourself in a at least in contention for a starting spot. All right, let's move on. We're going to talk about football to finish out the podcast. We'll give our final rundown on the things that are happening here on the gridiron. Okay, Rich, I don't think Oklahoma's finished with the 2021 class either. We learned that on Sunday when quarterback Ralph Rucker committed to be a part of this 2021 class, meaning Oklahoma's taking two quarterbacks in the class. They lost two quarterbacks to the transfer portal with Chandler Morris and Tanner Mordecai both heading out to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. You get one transfer in from Penn State. Now you get another freshman coming in from the state of Texas, who, by the way, was the MVP of his district in high school football. They've offered Austin Uke, which is an offensive lineman. You know, you talked earlier about this class being at 16. I don't know if you were including Rucker in that or if you even knew about the Rucker commitment, but they have signed 16 at this point. But when you look at this, Rich, and you think about the transfer portal guys, you think about late minute guys, late bloomers, I guess, like Ralph Rucker. I mean, they're not finished. And whether those guys come through the transfer portal or whether they come through the traditional commitment sign in February, I think we can at least say that this roster and the position battles that are ahead of Oklahoma, they're definitely not finished yet.
No, the position battles absolutely are not. And I think you highlighted a few of those specifically on the offensive line, not only in post format, but you've made mention of those here. There are some battles that will rage on, not just through the spring, Matt, but I don't think we're going to see any of those resolved until the fall. In fact, when it comes to the quarterback position, the heir apparent, I don't think I'm naive in thinking this, but the heir apparent is Caleb Williams. Can we agree on that?
No, 100%. Yeah. I mean, these guys, and you got to love social media because I'm guilty of this. You know, social media is where you really get to display a lot of your ignorance. And for these people to see, you know, transfer coming in from Penn State, you see signing another going to be freshman quarterback as a part of this class, for people to jump on social media, jump on Twitter, Facebook, wherever, and say, well, you know, a lot of pressure now on Spencer Rattler, a lot of pressure on Caleb Williams. You know what? No, there's not. I mean, these guys, the pressure is to back up Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams at the appropriate times. These are selections that are going to build depth for Oklahoma's quarterback room. And ultimately, they'll make Caleb Williams better. They'll make Spencer Rattler better through collective wisdom in the quarterback room and through really pushing them out on the field. But the reality is Lincoln Riley's job right now is to make Spencer Rattler better in 2021 than he was in 2020 and to get Caleb Williams ready to play in 2022. And beyond that, his next most important task is to get somebody that can be a suitable backup when called upon, and now he's got a deeper pool of quarterbacks for that task. But you're absolutely right. This is Spencer Rattler's team. And when Spencer Rattler decides he's finished with his team and wants to test the waters of the NFL, it becomes Caleb Williams' team. And we know what Lincoln Riley's going to do. We know he's going to say there's a quarterback battle. And we know about 2 weeks, somewhere in that last two-week window, before the season opener, he's going to announce Caleb Williams. We know that.
Do we?
I mean, not. I'm not talking about this coming year. I'm talking about after. Oh, okay. Yeah. Not this coming. Not 21.
I thought you meant that he was going to announce Caleb Williams as backup.
No. Oh, yeah. We know that. Yeah, Caleb Williams will be here. I'm just going to make a bold prediction. That's going to be 9 months.
And I'm
going to
disagree with that.
No, here's what it is. Caleb Williams will be the backup quarterback for this football team in 2021. But on the depth chart, he will be listed as the third string quarterback.
I can get on board with that on the depth chart. And I really believe that's why they're bringing in a guy like a Micah Bowens, the Penn State quarterback transfer that you've been mentioning here. They want a dual threat guy, a guy who maintains the integrity of the system, maintains the integrity of the scheme. But when you look at Caleb Williams, what we know is he's going to play.
Yep.
And he's going to play four games because they're not extending that red shirt rule to where they're going to allow players to play an entire season and then red shirt them still. Mm-hmm. That's going away after this year, at least in my opinion. We'll see how the whole health pandemic and the solutions play out to that. But Caleb Williams will be listed number three. He will play, but we will see Micah Bowens as well. No questions asked.
No, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. But I think if there was a significant injury to Spencer Rattler, then this becomes Caleb Williams' team. But garbage time stuff beyond those four games, it's going to be somebody else. Okay. Speaking of Caleb Williams, speaking of Caleb Williams, he is officially on campus and enrolled in classes at the University of Oklahoma, and he's not alone. You got defensive tackle Isaiah Coe, defensive end Ethan Downs, receiver Cody Jackson, cornerback Latrell McCutcheon, defensive back Jordan Mukes, and defensive end NRK Nathan Rollins-Cabong, Clayton Smith, linebacker, and receiver Mario Williams. 9 of Oklahoma's 16 commitments are on campus right now for the spring semester and will participate in spring football. So here's my question for you, Rich. Of those 9 guys, give me one or two names that you think can be an immediate impact type guy in 2021.
I do believe you have to look at the wide receiver position, and really? It's because there was so much left to be desired there. We know about Theo Weiss. We're not 100% certain on the health of a guy like Jaden Hazelwood, although I do think he's one of the top options that you have to look at the wide receiver. And guess who else you have? Mims out there. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma's bringing in some highly touted wide receivers. Mario Williams is a prime target for me, a guy who I think could have a Mims-like impact on the season. Very similar in their style. I believe they're very similar in their speed, even though I've never seen them on the field together. But when you look at what Mims did and you look at another guy who compares well to him, Williams jumps off the page to me as a guy who could, like I said, jump in and have that immediate impact. Another guy that I would be willing on the defensive side to place a bet on who would make an impact as a true freshman, and I think this one's less likely than the others, it's NRK.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the frame that he brings in.
Just an athletic freak is what
that's the part that concerns me. If he's going to play on the defensive end or as a defensive end, I think he's going to have to add a little bit of poundage to him. 6'7", 240. That's great for a basketball player, maybe, but for a guy who essentially wants to bull rush and get through, wreak havoc in the backfield, get through this offensive line, I think he's going to have to add a few pounds and a little bit of strength because he's going to stick out like a sore thumb with his height. But I do think he could be the most impactful player on the defensive side of the ball in this class specifically.
Well, I'm sure Lon Kruger wants him to beef up a little bit more as well before he hits the hardwood for the Sooners next season. And all these guys, the truth is all these guys are going to beef up a little bit while they're on campus. I'm going to agree with you on Mario Williams. Speaking of two sports stars, Skip Johnson's probably pretty excited to get some time with Mario Williams as well, to get him on the baseball diamond with the Sooners. But I do agree. I think Mario Williams has a chance to get on the field and make an impact this fall. But to me, the guy that really stands out in all of this is on the defensive side, and it's an Oklahoma kid. That's Jordan Mukes. I think Latrell McCutcheon has a chance in time. He can get on the field for some significant snaps. But I look at Jordan Mukes, and I think Oklahoma looks at this kid, and they see a big hole right there where Trey Norwood left. And we've talked about this, Rich. That means there's no one to push Buki right now. And physically, Jordan Mukes and Brendan Radley Hiles are not the same guy. And
no, they're complete opposites.
Right. If Mukes can get up to speed, he is that long, athletic, strong guy that Alex Grinch likes in the secondary. If they can get him up to speed on the schemes and stuff like that through the spring and into fall camp, Mukes is a kid that could compete at that nickelback position and push Buki very early in 2021. So that's my thoughts when I look at these guys. The thing is, you've got to be really excited that, number one, you've got over half of your class on campus. But number two, you've got to be excited that when you see young guys play and have success, what that breeds is more confidence in other young guys playing and potentially having success. And that's why when you look at the freshman All-American team, something that I'm proud to say, I got to vote in that through the Football Writers Association of America. And you see that Spencer Rattler and Marvin Mintz, a name that you mentioned in Mims, you see that those guys, not only did they get to play as freshmen, but they excelled as freshmen to the point that they were named All-Americans. What that does is it can't do anything other than breed more confidence in a young player like Mario Williams or Jordan Mukes or an NRK. When they see the guys ahead of them that played as freshmen just the year before they step on campus get awarded to All-American status, I mean, Rich, you would think that's just more of a motivating factor for those guys to knuckle down in the spring and in the fall to have their chance to make an impact, right?
Yeah, I think it has something to do with it, knowing that you have an opportunity to compete, number one, for any kind of playing time as a true freshman, I think would be pretty significant, especially if you're running not just with the twos, but every now and then they're putting you in there with the ones. That would be plenty of a motivator if it were for me, aside from the accolades. I know that these are all players who are looking at making a name for themselves. They're seeing the collegiate level as one final obstacle before the ultimate goal. So there's no reason not to go in. And especially when you're a highly touted recruit, a guy who's in the top 150, there's no reason to go into any program in the country and say, I don't belong here, because these are kids who have worked hard. They got here for a reason. And now it's time for them to, once again, as you mentioned, Matt, knuckle down and prove that they were worthy of that scholarship, that they were worthy of their name being called and being placed out there on the field.
Yeah. And I think beyond that, it gives you that confidence to know that if you're talented, you're talented. If you're talented right. enough to get on the field, they don't care if you're a freshman or a senior. Right. They're going to put you on the field. And again, to see a guy like Marvin Mims, everybody knew Spencer Rattler was going to play. Everybody knew from day one. Spencer was the minute Jalen Hurts walked off the field, they knew the next quarterback to walk on the field was going to be Spencer Rattler. But Marvin Mims, we thought he might get some spot time. We thought he was talented enough to jump in there, but no one had Marvin Mims pegged as the go-to receiver on this team. No one, not a single person. And so whether you're, you know, Mario Williams or one of these other receivers that are coming in with this class, you know. And Marvin Mims, by the way, didn't get spring ball last year either. But now you get spring ball. You know you have a chance to come in here, and you know this is a coaching staff. Their mindset is, on both sides of the ball, we're going to put the 11 best guys we have on the field. And if you can be one of those 11 best, not only can you play, but you can make a significant impact for this team. I mean, and if you're looking at it from a fan's perspective and you see the talent that's coming onto campus now, and then you see the young talent that just finished its first season and will go into next season as veterans, I get it. Oklahoma is a fan base that gets down on itself. Oklahoma is a fan base that is never satisfied. I mean, and Oklahoma is a fan base that a lot of times it's never good enough. Go look at the social media post. We're going to post on here, hey, Oklahoma got this guy in the transfer portal. Well, why didn't they recruit someone like that? How come they didn't get him the first time around? You're always going to have that mindset and part of the fan base. But the more centered, rational portion of this fan base looks at these young guys and think, not only is 2021 going to be a bright and opportunistic for Oklahoma, but so is 2022 and probably 2023, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, I really think you hit the nail on the head when you said that this coaching staff is looking for the best player to play at any given position. And It's easy for us to pick out a guy like a Spencer Rattler, not as easy for us to pick out a guy like a Marvin Mims, but it was definitely near impossible for any one of us to tag Anton Harrison as a day one starter when he stepped onto the field against Missouri State. So I think when we look at this mentality that the coaching staff has, the recruits that are coming in, the potential that exists, it at least has to excite you a little bit, knowing that any one of these players can make an impact at any given time, whether we're familiar with their name or we're not.
Right. And speaking of the putting the 11 best guys on the field heading into this weekend, the candidates to replace Creed Humphrey in the center position were basically sophomore Andrew Rame, Ian McIver, who's an upperclassman, and then going to the transfer portal, Chris Murray, who was a freshman All-American in his own right at UCLA. But now, kind of flying under the radar, we learn that Robert Congle is enrolled at OU and has joined the football team. This guy was a two-year starter for Arizona, and before that, he played in five games as a true freshman at Texas A&M. So not only is Oklahoma getting a two-year starter, they're getting a guy with 3 years playing experience. This guy will come in, and he will compete immediately to replace Creed Humphrey at the center position. And also immediately, he becomes one of Oklahoma's most experienced offensive linemen. This position battle, it's going to be important because it's going to have ripple effects. If Congle beats out a Chris Murray can play multiple positions on the offensive line. If Chris Murray beats out Robert Congle, guess what? Congle can play multiple positions along the offensive line. At Arizona, he played left guard, right guard, and center. This last season, he was the right guard. And so this position battle through the spring and into the summer, Rich, I don't think this is something that's going to be finalized up until game week for Oklahoma's first game of 2021. But however this battle shakes out, not only is it going to be fun to watch, but it's also going to see how it, again, sends that ripple effect down the line, because between Murray and Congle, those guys have a chance to play, and not just at the center position. If they lose that battle, they're going to battle out at one of the guard positions as well.
Now, where I will say a guy like Ian McIver has a step on some of the other guys who would be competing for that center role is that McIver's already developed a bit of a chemistry with a guy like Spencer Rattler, who will be the starting quarterback next year. I know that that handoff, that in the shotgun, that toss, however you would like to label it, the hike, I don't know, from the center to the quarterback, it plays a significant role in how successful you're going to be on that play. Matt, how many times have we seen a player who is inserted into that center role for the very first time, and the ball goes over the quarterback's head, the ball hits the quarterback in the feet, and the next thing we know is it's a busted play. You're simply falling on the ball and hoping that you can regain those yards on the next play. So where a guy like a McIver has a step up, he also, I believe, may have a step or be a step behind some of these other names when it comes to blocking schemes, when it comes to technique, and ultimately when it comes to footwork.
You know what? Here's the thing. I'm going to disagree with you on that, because I feel like the quarterback center exchange is more.
That's a good word for it.
Yeah, that's actually what it's called. But but the quarterback center exchange, the chemistry becomes a bigger part of that when it's actually under center. In the shotgun formation, there's not a lot of chemistry that gets involved there. Now, you're right, understanding the cadence and the tone in which the quarterback kind of get into that rhythm. But the reality is the ball going over the quarterback's head, that seldom has anything to do with chemistry. And most of the time, 99% of the time, it has to do with either the guy who is right in front of that center on the other side of the ball, or it has something to do with the guy just the center himself and the nerves that he has going through in his experience. So this is going to come, you're right, it's going to come down to footwork. It's going to come down to really chemistry on the guy to his left and right, those guards. And it's going to come down to knowledge and what Bill Beatonbow wants. Do they have that nastiness as well? And that's where I think a guy like Congle, a guy like Murray could have a little bit of an advantage, because they have the experience in playing in their various conferences. You know, Congle's played both in the SEC and in the Pac-12. Murray's played in the Pac-12. These guys know what it means, what it feels like to line up across somebody and just really have to go at him 110 miles an hour, where McIver, I don't know that he really knows that yet. And Andrew Rame, I don't know that he really knows that yet. But the reality is, this whole conversation, it could be McIver who wins. It could be Andrew Rame who wins. But it doesn't discredit the fact that this offensive line got better because it got deeper with quality guys who are proven. And I look at this kid that's coming in, and I don't, if you're Robert Kongle, I don't think you come to Oklahoma unless you have confidence that I can win a job and play on this offensive line. That guy's too experienced. He's too talented. And I get it. You know, he followed when Sumlin got fired at A&M, he left A&M and followed Kevin Sumlin to Arizona. When he got fired at Arizona, he left. I get that. But you don't leave and go to a place where you don't think you can contend. No one transfers in that situation to be a backup. And this guy's coming in, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun through the spring.
The only thing I'll say, Matt, to kind of close out this segment of the podcast, is that I get where you're coming from. When it comes to a guy like Kongle, I get that experience. But I'm a big fan of adding depth in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, I'm all about adding competitive depth. Why? Because when players are forced to compete for starting roles, when players have the ability to push the guy who's in front of them, everybody gets better from top to bottom. And so when we look at these names that we're mentioning, regardless of who gets that starting role, we can be 100% assured that it wasn't just handed to them because of a lack of depth, because of a lack of experience, but rather it was earned. And that player deserves and has earned the right to step out on the field with that starting unit.
Yeah, for sure. And not only does that bring a conclusion to this segment of the Sooner Nation podcast, it will bring a conclusion to the Sooner Nation podcast. You're welcome to find us on the internet at heartland-sports.com. You can find us on Twitter at Sports Heartland. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know where you agree, where you disagree. If we missed out on something, or if you want us to talk about something, we'd love to hear your opinions on our opinions. Until then, have a fantastic week, everybody. Boomer Sooner.